So post-Waterloo, how does the British Army develop?
One of the difficult bits of this is that many historians have argued that the success of the British Army at Waterloo, I mean, after all, we're only talking about 28,000 British troops fought at Waterloo. I mean, the army which Wellington commands has a very large number of Dutch troops. It has a large number of German troops of various kinds, some of them the subjects of King George III, Hanoverians, but others Brunswickers, and so on. So the number of British soldiers actually on the battlefield at Waterloo is very small. It's about, say, about 28,000. But there are, of course, a large number of officers there, and the status, therefore, of the British officer corps, of the British Army, is very high after the war. But the argument is that, of course, those guys then stay in control of the army for about 30 years. I mean, Wellington's military secretary is the commander of the army in the Crimea in 1855. I mean, Lord Raglan, who'd been active under Wellington in 1812 as a young man. Wellington regarded him as the most efficient man he'd ever come across. I mean, he said one of the most efficient men of business in the kingdom was the man who becomes Lord Raglan. So he had a very high reputation for administrative skill. But whether or not they have kind of great new ideas about military organisation is quite another matter. So that's the first thing. These guys remain in command of the army for 30, 40 years after Waterloo. Second thing, of course, is the British politicians don't want to pay for a large army. And so there's a huge cutback after the war, and right through the 1810s, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, the British run a very small army by comparison with continental European countries, who also cut back as well. So basically the army remains based on regiments, small, it's not organised into permanent divisions and brigades, it's not a flexible force in terms of continental warfare. But the British, of course, expand their global influence because they are so successful in India in this period, after 1815. And there they run a very large army consisting essentially of Indians, with relatively small numbers of European troops. And so the British have this kind of schizophrenic military reputation. They're undoubtedly running big armies, but they are run essentially in India, paid for by the Indians, and consisting largely of Indian troops. The UK army remains small, and so on. Now, it's perfectly well trained at doing what it does at regimental level. It's perfectly reasonably well equipped. On the whole, the artillery is kept going, but it is awfully small by the standards of, say, the French, the Prussians, or the House of Habsburg, or the Russians. And so that is their problem. But I think it's a bit unfair sometimes to talk about the military as being ossified in their attitudes. It's simply the politicians aren't going to pay for a big army.